Yeah, do some leaking. So I saw some blue sky peeking through. Did you see? Some blue sky coming. Well, that's a good thing. Nice to have a little of that. So I did want to let some of you know that two people in our group are leaving today. And I knew that in advance. We knew that in advance, but I didn't announce it in advance. I'm announcing it now. So, and I'm not exactly sure who they are. Are they here? Is anyone here who's leaving today? Catherine is leaving. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Iris said she was leaving today, but coming back in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. I think it's Iris and Catherine. Oh, Richard. Yes. 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 Also. Yes. So we're going to be a little bit smaller, just to be aware of that. And Richard, too, yeah.
Lisa is not here this afternoon.
Okay, thank you for letting me know. That's good that she's getting her rest. That's good. So I'm thinking this afternoon to get ourselves started with practice, I'd like to just reflect a little bit with you on meditation practice and give a serving suggestion for practice that you might try when you're out there today. So in this song that Jigme Lingpa sings, he's referring to this practice of Togal. And I want us to sample the essence of that practice a bit. So the practice comes out of a lineage in this Tibetan tradition called Dzogchen, and Dzogchen means, it's spelled like D-Z-O-G, and then Chen, C-H-E-N, Dzogchen. And Dzogchen means the great wholeness. That's the name of this particular tradition, this lineage out of which Jigme Lingpa is singing and in which he's been trained. Dzogchen means the great wholeness. And you might wonder, what does that mean, the great wholeness? In some ways, the great wholeness does describe the view and the practice that emerges from this tradition. In the view of this tradition, as in some other Buddhist traditions also, awakening is not something that we strive for. We need to strive for. Awakening is not something that we cultivate even. Awakening, and this is really kind of a broadly speaking, right? Because of course we do a lot of cultivation, of course. But broadly speaking, this thing that we seek, this wakefulness that we seek, is already present. And so our practice then isn't so much one of striving and producing and cultivating and aiming at something as a goal, as it is about relaxing and discovering what's already present within. And I would say, in general, practice is a balance. Right? There's some effort. There's some cultivation. There's some discipline. But there's also this other side, which is very much emphasized in this particular tradition of Dzogchen, that the state of ease, the state of peace, the state of non-separation that we seek is primordially here. It's primordially present in our being. It's our birthright. And in Mahayana traditions, the name of that birthright is Buddha nature, Tathagata Garbha, in the Sanskrit, Tathagata Garbha, the seed of Buddha. And everyone has the seed of Buddha in the perspective of this tradition, including the insects and the animals and the birds, not just us, but all living creatures have the seed to awaken, Tathagata Garbha. So in Mahayana, it's more emphasized as a seed. In Dzogchen, in this tradition of the great wholeness, in this particular strain of Tibetan practice, the way that's understood is that we have this primordial Buddha inside already. And the primordial Buddha is primordially awake, but very obscured by our own, another part of ourselves, obsession with the thinking mind, an obsession with grasping at things as real and true and externally present and so forth. So our grasping gets in the way, our habitual patterns get in the way, but some part of us is already there. And so in the practice of Dzogchen, in the way meditation is practiced in this tradition, it's very much about getting out of our own way, like not fabricating so much. And when we get out of our own way, then trusting that primordial Buddha, that primordial wisdom, to make itself known to us. So we've been talking a bit about these treasure texts and this tradition of the treasure finders, and that they went out into the wilderness to seek, and into wild spaces to seek treasure. And treasure is concealed. And you're looking for, in the outside world, somehow, the conditions to find the treasure. It's an allegory. It's a metaphor for what we're doing on the spiritual path. We are really seeking the treasure within. That's what we're really doing on the spiritual path. And the allegory of the treasure seeking is a way for us to get comfortable and to begin to explore this possibility that the wakefulness that we're looking for is already present. But the fact that we do treasure seeking and treasure finding in the natural world can't be a mistake, I don't think. It's not random, that's for sure. When we're out in the natural world, a lot of our fabricated self falls away, right? Our structuring, our need to control. It's really hard to be outside for very long if you really are a control freak. It just drive you nuts. I mean, we try, you know, with our mosquito repellent and whatever, to shelter ourselves from the elements. But really, you have to let go, right? Obviously, you guys have been great. You've been out there letting go of control and being in the natural state. And in fact, in the tradition, this primordial wakefulness is sometimes called this. It's called the Neluk, which means the natural state. So we go out in the natural world to discover our own natural state. And that natural state is already awake, already there. So there's something about this practice, and this is the practice that he's doing here, that's more about allowing than it is about making anything happen. He is doing a particular, there is a discipline here, and his discipline, and I'll be teaching you this practice, so you're going to do this practice. So it has some discipline, a little bit. It's very loose discipline, but the discipline, within the discipline of his practice, he is letting go. And in that letting go, he's being visited by the natural state. And you can see that progression in the song if you read through it again with that in mind, like thinking about what's going on there. There's a point, it's on the second page, when he says, actually, let's go to the bottom of the first page. This line, these colors piercing my water bubble eyes. So these are his eyes. These colors coming in through the senses of his eyes bestow radical simplicity. He's not making himself radically simple. He's being radically receptive. And in that receptivity, he's discovering his natural state is this radical simplicity. No need to do or make or create or even meditate per se. He's being given, he's being visited by radical simplicity, which of course is arising from within him, right? Where else would it come from? But it's something about the conditions, his gaze, the environment, in this case it's the rainbows appearing in the sky. And it might be quite literal. If you've ever been to Tibet or the Himalayan region, there are rainbows everywhere. Or, you know, have you been to, like, Crestone, Colorado? I don't know. There's some parts of the United States where that's true, too. Like, every day there are just rainbows appearing in the sky. So it may be quite literal that he's taking in the colors of the rainbow. Or it could be a vision. He's having a vision. And then he says, just reading a little further, aimless awareness wanders where it will. And that is very much a meditation instruction. That's what we'll be working with when we go out into the wild today. Letting aimless awareness wander where it will. What does it mean, aimless? No focus or goal for your mindfulness. Like, I'm going to pay attention here. So the practice is to pay attention to the panorama of the present moment. And in Vipassana tradition, sometimes this is described as choiceless awareness. In the Dzogchen tradition, it's described as panoramic awareness. So panoramic in the sense of boundless, just being open, totally open. And the senses are open for this practice. The eyes are open for this practice. The breath is open. The energy, your energy is open. There's this sense of no obstruction, no place where you are aiming. Aimless awareness wanders where it will. And there's no control. So we're actually letting go of control, which for many of us meditators is really challenging because we've been training in control, right? We've been training in controlling the mind, in taming, training, focusing. When we get distracted, we bring it back, right? That's a bit of a control, more than a little control. And we're controlling our experience. We may have a reason for controlling our experience. It might be a good reason. Reason being, when the mind is focused and relaxed, we experience peace. It's a good reason, a very good reason. Maybe we experience a reduction in our stress. But in this particular kind of practice, the place that we come back to when we're distracted is open awareness, being in this open state. And at first, that's a very challenging practice because the mind wants to grab. It wants to grab onto something. It wants to grab onto a particular sensation. It wants to grab onto a sound. It wants to grab onto something like that. And we are actually practicing letting go. Letting go, letting go, letting go. If we're resting anywhere, it's in the vastness of space, the vastness of our the field of our present moment experience, and letting that sense of space and sky practice us. So we are letting that sense of openness be the practice. And then when we're distracted, it's the grasping. We can feel that grasping. And then the practice becomes just relaxing, leaning back and letting go again. That's the practice. It sounds very simple. It's simple, but not easy, because we're so addicted to following our trains of thought. We're very addicted to meandering into the past and anticipating the future. So the other piece of this is we are radically present, just here, just now. So he's hinting at that. You can see the hints of that practice here. Hints of that practice. The aimless awareness wandering where it will. And we see that his eyes are open. And so how many people here have meditated with their eyes open? So just curious how many have. Okay. And how many have not? No eyes open before. Okay. So it's new to some of us. When we first practice with eyes open meditation, we might want to start like just gradually, like opening the eyes just a little bit. For me, that was really helpful. I meditated with eyes closed for the first 10 years of my practice of meditation before I was introduced to eye open meditation. And I started by just opening my eyes a little bit, just a little bit, to let the light in, and in a kind of soft gaze, just seeing, say, my lap and the floor in front, or in the case of us when we go out there, the forest floor, and then slowly work with raising the gaze and keeping an unfocused and soft panoramic gaze. And do that for a few minutes and then close the eyes. If you're not used to eye open meditation, come back and then try again. And if you're used to eye open meditation, then you can go ahead and gaze panoramic with your gaze raised and take in the feast of the forest and see if you can rest that way without the eyes darting here and there and, you know, looking for this, looking for that. Oh, look at that. You know, can you be soft and open? That doesn't mean that you won't see things. You will. You know, something will fall in front of you and your eyes will, so that's okay. And then you're training to just keep widening so that you're with the space, even while something is falling in the space, that you're with the sky, so to speak, even though things are happening in that sky. That's the practice. Questions? So another dimension of this practice that he's doing is that he is using the field of the sky and he is practicing with the sky. So because we're getting some sky, the sky is coming through even without the little breaks in the clouds, we could still do this practice of sky gazing. So taking some time today when you go out, even 20 minutes or longer, to do some sky gazing too. You might do 20 minutes of sky gazing and then go into the forest for a little while and do some practice under a tree in the forest and come back out and do some sky gazing. You can do a little meandering. And so with the sky gazing, you may want sunglasses because there is a glare. Even with clouds, glare can be a thing when you're doing sky gazing. And so with that practice, you just cast your gaze into the open sky and rest there. It's really the same practice. It's the same practice, but it's using the backdrop of the sky. And then resting there and mingling that outer sky with the inner sky, so to speak. The outer space with the inner space. And see when you're practicing in that way what gets transmitted from the sky to you in that practice. What happens? Questions? Okay. You want to try? Okay. All right.
I have a question.
Yes.
Just about, so like, so you're going to hear, all the senses are open.
Yes.
So you're not noting anything in any way. You just keep opening.
Keep opening, yeah. So in some forms of meditation practice, you do note that. So actually, it can be quite, if you've done that a lot, this will be a challenge. It's an undoing of that habit, even that habit. It's a letting go. You can let go of that and just be with purely present with the sense experience without the intermediary piece of, oh, it is the labeling. And this is true with thought, too, because thoughts aren't going to stop when you're in this open awareness practice. The chatter isn't necessarily just going to turn off. Eventually, the volume will go down, eventually, but not necessarily right away, because it's a very spacious practice. And when we're in this spacious place, things tend to come into the space, right? When we're really spacious, you may have noticed that already on retreat, right? Things that deep in our psyche rise up and make themselves known to us. And that could be in conscious moments, could be in our dreams, could be in the state between sleeping and waking up. It's quite common on retreat to have these things just rise up because we've given space for that to happen. So in the practice of Dzogchen, in the practice of this great wholeness, when those things rise up, we see them as just the natural energy of the mind, like a tsunami rising up, and we just let it, in the words of the tradition, self-liberate. So just let it free itself. You don't have to do something about your thoughts. You don't have to do anything about your thoughts or your emotions other than be present to them in a curious, kind, and open way. Just like you're being with the leaf falling in front of you or with the sound of the stream, just as you are with your sense experiences, open, curious, but not conceptual. Then you're that way with your own things as they come up, your thoughts, your emotions, whatever arises, your judgments, your self-judgments, your all those things, right? The fears and anticipations that we carry with us from moment to moment. But what we notice when we're doing this practice is that those things are not all there is. We can rest in the space in which those thoughts and emotions are arising. And when we identify with the space, there's so much possibility there for deep love of what is, as it is. So that's where we're heading in the practice of Dzogchen, is to be in deep love with the present moment and what's in it. And what's in it as it is, not as we want it to be, not as we want to be, but just as we are. This is, Dzogchen is the great come-as-you-are party. It's the great come-as-you-are party, this practice. Come as you are and rest as you are. And when you rest as you are, slowly that nature makes itself known to you, that inner nature, Buddha nature, whatever you might want to call it, primordial purity, awareness with a capital A, makes itself known to you.
Mm-hmm. So let's say I see leaf falling and thought comes to my mind, how beautiful. So I include that as part of my awareness. And then another thought says, oh, I shouldn't be thinking about this. So I include that as well. So is it all-inclusive?
All-inclusive, yeah. So then, you know, that thought will occur, oh, what a beautiful leaf. And then you realize, oh, I'm getting really drawn into thinking about the leaf. And then that gets included. You keep stepping back and making space. Mm-hmm. Right, so as otherwise we're just trying to manage all the thinking, right? It's just making space. Yeah.
I know you've answered this already, but can you give us something to hang our hat on in the sense that, like, what will the job of the mind be? Like, mm-hmm. Give it a job.
Yes, it wants a job, doesn't it? Doesn't it? Ah, yes, I'm glad
so
you.
So, what job would we give?
How about tell it it has permission to just be? You have permission to just be. And it may get quite uncomfortable. So if you absolutely have to have a job or you're going to go crazy, you can rest in your body. I like the body as the job. If you have to have a job, resting in the groundedness and the subtleness of this body, and maybe the feeling of your body against the earth, if you have to have somewhere to be in for a while. And that's no failure in the practice. It could be good to ground there, for sure, and then to open up again. But But I say, give yourself permission to just be, because the mind will endlessly seek a job. And part of the challenge and the beauty of this practice is being confident that doing nothing is enough. Getting confident that doing nothing is more than enough. It's a really incredible experience to do absolutely nothing. And it's hard to do nothing. It can be challenging to do nothing. But then once you do nothing, some magic happens. Magical things occur when you just start to be. Good things. And you may need something to do sometimes. So, yes.
I have a teacher that calls thoughts when you're meditating like toddlers. So I imagine myself in a very safe space and toddlers are rented out for those of us who have experiences with lots of kids. And they just kind of come and go. And they don't stay in one place, but what stays in one place is me.
Yes.
They
and
they're
in flow. Yes.
Building on that, I have this experience lately of that thoughts are drawn to me, that they are seeking to be known. And they're like magnets. And lately I've been playing with the idea of sort of, you know, a toddler, you know, coaching them sort of, there's this beautiful field here of all the serious thoughts, why don't you get together? and in love, you know, doing it in a loving way. Mm-hmm. And that, because I have trouble going, you know, fighting thoughts. I can't let them lead nowhere. But if I can just invite the thoughts into this open field, you know, the thoughts that want to like plan for tomorrow's meeting, you know, or the, you know, I guess you guys go together over there. It's remarkably helpful for me. And it doesn't feel like I'm controlling. It feels like I'm sort of coaching, encouraging.
You sound like shepherd. You're shepherding.
Exactly.
Yeah. The lamb ropes. Yes, like Luna. Yeah. She's a wild thing. Yes. And so in the other way we work with thoughts in Dzogchen tradition is to notice that thoughts have content, but they also have energy, or they also are this pure dynamic energy of the mind, which is very natural. It's like our mind is like this incredibly fertile and creative and flowering, wild thing. And the things that it's producing, where we get tangled is we get caught by the narrative and the story and the content, and we're like hooked by the content. But if we noticed that it's also energy and just be with the energy, then we can let it be. We don't have to do anything to it. We can gaze at our thoughts with wonder, like, and awe, like, look at that display. So in Dzogchen practice, they call it the magical display in these meditation texts, to rest with the magical display of the mind, which is the thinking, but with that affection that you're describing. Michael, do you go by Michael or Mike?
Both.
Okay. With the affection, yeah, and the wonder, like, oh, look, kind of like we might look at the view in the wild world, or look at the wind, look at the wind. And in subtle body practice, the thoughts are seen as wind, actually, or energy winds that are blowing through the body. And the thoughts are energy winds that are blowing through our experience. And we can see them in that way, just like watch them like the wind whipping the trees around as something very beautiful and natural instead of aberrant and frustrating, right? Like, oh, go away, you thoughts. But instead, like, oh, wow, look at the magical display. But that takes stepping back from the content. It takes that little step back and not being hooked by the content.
Is the content you're talking about what he means by appearances?
Appearances, yes. Yes, appearances. And so appearances is a word that's used to describe what is the wild emotions and feelings and thoughts that are inside, and also the distracting appearances that are outside, distracting, so to speak. The things that we grasp at as real, those are also appearances, the whole thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Are we ready?
Like you were saying, it's not, you don't necessarily need to meditate. So is this an attitude that you bring into every moment of your life, or is this structured practice?
It's both. It's structured practice in the sense that the practice is the one that we're being invited into here, that you can practice when you go into the woods or into the fields today. Is just a practice of intentionally relaxing and letting go into the panorama of the now without control. Yeah. And it is a practice, but you're right, it could be done at any moment of our lives, right? So it is a formal practice, but the purpose of it is to let it permeate so that we're doing that more and more in our everyday lives.
Does it relate to, like, I've been taught to do shamatha without an object? Is it like that, or is it...
It's similar, but it isn't the same. It is very similar. It isn't exactly the same. So there was a time when I asked one of my teachers this question. I actually asked him to teach on this, because he came, Sony Rinpoche, came to visit Wonderwell, and we had a series of questions that we wanted him to address when he was there. And one of them was this difference between shamatha, without an object, which means for everyone in the room, mindfulness meditation with no object, like no breath, nothing. Shamatha meditation without an object, and Dzogchen practice. So the difference between the two, he said, is that shamatha without an object, the awareness of awareness isn't necessarily there. Awareness is there, but awareness that recognizes the nature of awareness isn't necessarily there. And so we could say the vipassana element isn't necessarily there, the insight element. And that in a pure practice of Dzogchen, the awareness is non-dual. So the awareness is aware of itself in a way that is non-dual. So there's an extra element of insight. It's not just peace. We're not just resting with no object in peace. We're resting in no object with peace is a basis. And then on top of that, there is this awareness, knowing it is not separate from everything, and awareness knowing itself. So that's what he said. And I found that helpful. You can chew on it and see if it helps, or if it makes sense to you, Eric. Yeah.
Just practice with it for a few thousand years.
We don't have to do this in this lifetime. Yes. All right. Yeah.
Is it different from Vipassana? How is it different from open field awareness and Vipassana?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I would say yes in the sense that you're practicing open field awareness. I think for the purposes of right now, yes. You can just think of it as the same. If you are really going into a serious study of Dzogchen, you might see there's a lot of subtle differences around technique, and the end result, no, different. I mean, the goal, no, different. But some of the ways that get there are a little bit different. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
I'm just curious, what happens in Zen? It's non-dual also, right?
Yes, yes.
It's different.
Yes. Yes. I mean, these are meditative traditions that have developed in different parts of the world and gone very deep with their own trajectory, practices, ways, and they're not all the same. It would be flattening the traditions to say they're all the same. But the end result, I personally believe it's all aimed at the same non-dual awareness, non-dual wakefulness. It's just different ways of approaching it. And thank goodness there are different ways, and we're so fortunate that we actually get to sample all those different ways for the first time, like in the last 100 years. Those traditions weren't necessarily having those conversations, and now, because of our global situation, we can sample. Yeah. You ready? Ready to go practice to plunge into the wild and take this practice with you. Do some sky gazing and some forest gazing, and we'll come back together with your home group as before at 4 in your meeting place, and we'll be in here at 4:30. And it looks like the weather is cooperating, so let's keep working.